My name is Vern Reike. I am a professor at the School of Law, the University of Washington in Seattle. More importantly, I am the grandson of a couple of very fine grandfathers, but one of them I want to mention in particular this morning, the Reverend Heinrich Wilhelm Reike, who was a missionary from the Hermannsburg Mission Society, sent from Germany to Eastern Washington. I'm sure that you people will remember in the history of Europe that there was a time when Catherine the Great of Russia took a number of German farmers and moved them into Russia to help teach the people there how to grow better grain crops, and made an arrangement with them which ultimately was forgotten. As in Egypt, you know, that after Catherine had died, there arose a czar who remembered not Joseph, I guess. And so the Russian-German farmers moved and they settled in various parts of the United States. One of the waves of immigration came to Western Washington, and a number of the farms there were originally started by these people. My grandfather was not in that group, but he was sent by the Mission Society to minister to that group. He was, in fact, the first Lutheran pastor in the east side of the Cascade Mountains, and was one of the very few pastors in the entire area at that time. Before this was a state, before there were any judges or courthouses, before Granddad arrived, there were no pastors, but there were people. Some of them were young, and some were male, and some were female. Not an unusual situation.
Where did you settle? I haven't heard about this before.
Granddad settled in a buckboard with a horse called Flora in front. He moved around Colfax, Fairfields, what is now Spokane, Odessa, Walla Walla. He apparently organized about 60 congregations in Eastern Washington, about a dozen of which still exist, and my brothers and I run around helping them celebrate their 80th and 85th and 90th anniversary. Some of these young men and young women started living together, and they had children. And there was no marriage certificate anywhere. And when Granddad and his buckboard and Flora, the horse, would come to the farm, there would be a worship service and sometimes a baptism. And I wonder whether or not those young men and women were married to each other. And I'd like to know what you think about that.
I would say they were not married.
They were not married to each other. Their children were illegitimate.
What determines the condition of marriage?
The question being asked of me is, who determines the characteristics, the conditions, the circumstances of a marriage?
Whether it's legal or not.
I'd like to say that I think they were as married as they could ever get.
They were as married as they could ever get.
Did your grandfather perform marriage ceremonies for them when he came through? No record.
Sometimes he blessed their relationship while he was baptizing one, two, or three children.
Someone has said in the field of ethics, consensus facit matrimonium, the consent makes the marriage,
right.
In God's sight at least. Now, I don't know how that stands in the courts, but it was assent, and that the essential thing in God's sight is that they consent together to live together.
Well, in some states you have what are termed common law marriage too.
Yes, you do have common law marriage in many states. The territory of Oregon, as it was then known, never has had common law marriage. Never has had.
Is the territory of laws?
Territory, being a territory of the United States, had law. That is to say, if a boy and girl wanted to travel to some established city and find a judge or find a clergyman, they would have been able to have had an official ceremony performed and a record made and so forth. These young men and women did not. Some of them did not. You understand what I'm saying? They weren't trying to evade. They just didn't want to go over to Olympia. And neither would you if you'd been out here in the time when the conditions were as primitive as they were then.
Could they have one of these circumstances?
I'm sorry, what?
That's all right, go ahead.
Yeah?
In some places where architects are licensed much later than they began their practicing, they come in under the grandfather's clause or something like that.
In reciprocity.
Yeah, reciprocity, yeah. I wondered when the law came closer to these people in territory, I mean, moved in, as the settlement grew and probably got in some law, couldn't something like that have been done, or were these people just willfully ignored?
They were not. I don't think that they were deliberately going out of their way to avoid. It was just a long way from Fairfield, what is now Fairfield, Washington, to the nearest community with a courthouse. And judges and ministers were rare. In fact, it wasn't until some years later that a Pastor Horn showed up, and there were then two pastors. I know that because they immediately held a convention.
legal side of the house, so to speak, the legal profession, the lawmakers and so on, do they deliberately want to establish illegitimacy? They could easily have passed laws making these things legitimate.
Legitimizing the children.
Yes.
And did very early.
Yeah.
That is to say, provisions were immediately made by which the father and the mother could, by doing some things after the birth of the child, make them officially, legally legitimate. That was easy, and we talked about some of that later. What I want you to answer for me, ladies and gentlemen, is before that kind of thing happened, any official records made. And in many of those old marriages in the early pioneer days, there never was an official marriage made. Was the child born to that relationship a legitimate child or an illegitimate child? Those of you who believe that the child was a legitimate child, please put up your hand. Thank you. Was the wife in that, was the woman who was living with the man, I must not say wife because that prejudges the matter, was the woman who was living with the man under those circumstances legally entitled to support by the man? Those of you who believe that she was, please put up your hand. I lost a few, but still have a good, sound majority. Now, I take it that what you're telling me is that the contract, the agreement between those people, resulted in something that the society ought to respect as being valid and having enforceable circumstances, giving the child the right of a legitimate child, giving the wife the right of support, sharing property, and the rest of those things, even though there never was a technical marriage. Now I want to tell you about Peck and Peck.
What forms a technical marriage? A piece of paper?
Well, I hope that we know more about that by the time the hour is over than we do now. Now I'm going to tell you about the case of Peck against Peck. Now you have to put up with me. This case was a divorce action in the state of Massachusetts. in 1892. A woman by the name of Mrs. H.S. Lake had lost her husband, and she met Mr. Peck, and she and Mr. Peck, then in Oregon, in 1886, the time that my grandfather, 1885, came out here with his buckboard and floor. Okay? Same time now. Almost 100 years ago. I know that those of you who are from the East Coast are not impressed by 100 years. But when my father was born out there in the prairie, grandmother walked a couple miles to get a bucket of water. And the coyotes came through the house while she was gone. And it's, okay. Mrs. Lake and Mr. Peck wrote and signed the following document. I now want to read it to you. We, the undersigned, hereby enter into a co-partnership on the basis of the true marriage relation, recognizing love as the only law which should govern the sexual relationship. We agree to continue this co-partnership so long as mutual affection shall exist, and to dissolve it when the union becomes disagreeable or undesirable to either party. We also agree that all the property that shall be acquired by our mutual effort shall be equally divided on the dissolution of our co-partnership. Should any children result from this union, we pledge ourselves to be mutually held and bound to provide them support, whether the union continues or is dissolved. And they signed that document, and they had it witnessed, and they filed it in a public record after a length of time in the booming metropolis of Portland, Oregon, a little old town then down there that had records. And they lived together for a few months in Oregon, and then for 3 years in California, and then for a while in Iowa, and then for a while in New York, and then they wound up living the last part of a year together in New York, and then they had a falling out, and Mrs. H. S. Lake, or Mrs. Peck, depending on how you feel about that, sued Mr. Peck for a divorce. And Mr. Peck said, you can't sue me for a divorce. You're not married to me.
She should have sued for breach of contract.
All right, I was hoping that someone would say that. Should sue for breach of contract. Now I want to mention to you a case which is an old English case, a few years before this, which is commonly known as the highwayman's case. Two men entered into a contract pursuant to the terms of which they agreed that they would cooperate upon the highways of England in stopping various and diverse persons and relieving them of their money and sharing the proceeds thereof equally. And they did stop various and diverse persons and took their funds, and one of them held them, and he did not share equally. And the other one sued him for a breach of contract. What result do we reach in that case?
Well, a contract is a contract.
I'm in prison.
Both of them in prison.
They were illegal.
They had a contract.
Yeah, but the illegal proceeds.
The holdings were illegal.
The holdings that were, okay, that they were holdings was illegal, gotten gains. how could they resolve that in a court of law?
Well, I suppose the person who had been relieved of their wealth could come and sue them to get it back.
Oh, sure.
But as between the two of them, would you give one a remedy and make him share with the other?
No.
Why not?
Because they were engaged in illegal contraband or...
Because they were engaged in an illegal contract, huh? Therefore, no contract. I mean, if a contract means promises which are enforceable at law...
It's a contract.
It's a contract.
And if it's not enforceable at law...
It is not a contract.
It is not a contract. If this one is not enforceable at law, it is not a contract. That's a beautiful short opinion in the highwayman's case. The judge heard the evidence and ordered that they both be hanged. Should the court in 1892 in Massachusetts have heard the evidence in Peck and Peck and ordered that they both be hanged?
No.
Why not?
You mean hang this man and woman?
Why not?
They did not have an illegal contract.
Nothing illegal.
You mean they had a legal one?
Yes, sir.
In that case, we have to enforce it.
Yeah. Right.
So, we have now established that you needn't get married.
Well, marriage is a contract.
What do you mean by the term marriage? Now, I have heard the term said that marriage is simply a legal contract. A binding contract between two people, consenting contract, that they mutually agree to be man and wife, and whether this is pronounced by a minister or any judge or something, it is simply a refinement to put it on public record you can enter in. You and I can enter into a contract out here on the porch that's mutually agreeable to the two of us, and it could be enforced in law. We could agree that we were going to divide a wood pile equally, and it could be enforced. Or we could agree that you were going to take me down to Chillon for $25, and if you carried out your part, I'd have to give you the $25. We don't need to have a lawyer drawn up or a witness to it or anything else. It's
not very many years ago, two if I remember correctly, in the newspaper in Seattle, Washington, there appeared a story about a man who ran an ad in the newspaper that said essentially this: I wish to be in contact with a woman who will be my mistress, he didn't use those words, but who will enter into contract with me. I will pay $500 a month. Her responsibilities will be in the bedroom and the kitchen in that order. And this will be a valid contract. May they do that?
It depends.
The laws of the state about living in adultery.
Immoral.
Adultery means that you are having intercourse with someone who is not your spouse when you are already married.
What about fornication?
Neither one of these people. Fornication, okay. Fornication used to be a crime in most states, if not now.
Well.
Fornication under every bush, maybe, but it's not unlawful in most states anymore.
Prostitution is
nothing unlawful then.
Not unlawful.
Prostitution's illegal.
Prostitution is illegal. Is this prostitution?
No.
Mm-hmm. You're paying for services.
No.
Suppose that the woman enters into this contract with the man, clearly understood that they're not going to be man and wife. She simply is performing a service, sexual and culinary, and maybe some housekeeping. In case any of you don't know where I'm going, you've all been reading about Marvin against Marvin.
Oh, yeah.
That's down the line here a little bit, so watch yourself. You may be establishing some law you don't like before we get through. Suppose in the case in the newspaper that I've just told you about, that a woman enters into the contract with the man, he accepts the responsibility of an employer, She accepts the responsibilities of an employee, and he does not pay her. And she sues him for breach of contract. Shall we enforce the contract, or shall we order them both hanged?
Hanged.
Hanged? I will now ask the court to vote on this issue. May I see the number of those of you who are in favor of enforcing the contract? May I see the contingency that's in favor of some kind of punishment, not necessarily hanging, but not enforcing the contract. Not enforcing the contract.
More evidence is needed, sir.
More evidence. Let's talk for a moment about the case of Omer against Omer. The Omers, as the name might suggest to you, were a man and a woman who were living in Israel. Rather young couple. Had a child. Someone told them that if they wanted to immigrate to the United States, they would have to be single. I don't know whoever gave them that advice or why. But apparently someone told them that's the way that you had to do it if you wanted to be able to immigrate in the United States. So in Israel, they divorced themselves from each other. But they continued to live together. And then, because they were divorced, they filled out immigration papers and they showed themselves as being single persons, as indeed, legally, they were. Maybe. Although they were still living together, they still loved each other, they still shared their assets, they still mutually took care of their child, and they immigrated to New York, and they started a restaurant there, and they worked for a while, and then they heard about the great Pacific Northwest and decided to move, but they didn't do it all in one stage. The husband, oh no, no. The man, or husband, as the case may be, Mr. Omer, came out to the Pacific Northwest, and his wife remained in New York. Oh, no. The Omer woman remained in New York and ran the restaurant and sent him money. He bought land, he built a house. They didn't want to be deported from the United States. They were worried about being married to each other. They did not enter into a remarriage ceremony. She came out to Washington. She moved in with him after a few years separation. Somehow or other, the bloom had gone off the rose. He kicked her out. She said, give me my half of the property. And he said, lady, what property? It's mine. I bought it. She says, it's my money. You gave it to me. She sued him. Shall we order them both hanged? Just him. Just him.
Just him.
Yeah.
I would like, I heard you. And we'll find out pretty soon when the court here decides.
Okay.
I wonder if someone would like to be counsel for the Omer woman. Megan, you would like to represent the Omer woman. All right, let's hear your argument, counselor.
Well, first I need to establish some facts. They immigrated to the state of New York?
They did.
Is New York a common law state?
It is not.
It is not. Were they recognized as man and wife in that state?
They were not.
In any way?
No way that I'm aware of.
They did hold forth as man and wife, however. They lived together, they shared, they have a common child, they had common property, correct?
They had a child, they lived together, They ran a restaurant together. They denied that they were married because they were afraid that they would be deported.
Okay. However, for family and close friends, they were known as family. They held forth to their immediate community as family, and therefore established a marriage relationship.
They sure had a relationship.
We don't necessarily recognize a divorce in Israel. I don't know the status of that clearly. However, we're dealing with immigration issues as well, and that is that they lied.
They sure did. They lied to the United States. Now, I believe it was immaterial, but they lied.
But that's the material for the
They falsified on a formal document of the United States. I think they ought to be, well.
No, they did not, but they did have a divorce in Israel, whether we recognize that divorce or not. And we don't really recognize that divorce because it was on false grounds.
All right, you're right, Counselor. They didn't lie. They were divorced. Of course, they got divorced with their fingers crossed. But they were divorced.
Paper said they were divorced in Israel. We don't accept that divorce in the United States.
Yeah, we accept it.
Do we?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was under false pretenses, however, and never should have been consummated, because in fact this
You mean the divorce should never have been consummated?
Right. Okay. Now, they have moved to another state. Your new state of residence is Washington?
Yes.
Is Washington a common law state?
Never has been.
All right.
You mean common law marriage?
Right.
Never.
Okay. Were any of the states in between?
There was no cohabitation in between. They got on an airplane. This is quite a recent case, just a few years ago. Flew out here, cohabiting in New York, cohabiting in Washington. Flying in between.
Their marriage is a legal and formal one. They did have a verbal contract, and that verbal contract is binding because they very clearly held their community property in a joint share.
Community property is property which is owned by a husband and wife.
And it is community property because...
If held by a husband and wife.
Yeah. Well, California recognizes that when there is a common child, that even though they are not legally married, they are in essence, they are married.
This child was born before the divorce, though.
That's right. It's a common child. It's a
I don't understand this word essence.
All right, I'll
you mean out. Even though it isn't really, it is kind of?
There has been a common relationship, and there was a marriage in which there was common property.
Ah, well.
To reestablish that marriage relationship.
Wait a minute. There was property. They were living together. Whether or not there was a marriage is something that you are contending for, Counselor.
That's right, I am contending to that relationship does exist, whether they have put it in legal documentation.
That relationship means they were married.
That relationship is a marital relationship.
A marital relationship. You mean they were having intercourse?
That's right.
That's not a marital.
And that doesn't.
That is not a marital relationship.
That is not a marital relationship. You're the defense counsel.
That's adequate to ascertain that in fact there was more than simply a shared household. That in fact they were living together as man and wife. They had a common child. They had common property. They had a common restaurant, a common home. She is entitled to her share of the property because they have obtained these things in union.
Couldn't she just sue him for wages? It's simpler.
Could one highwayman have sued the other highwayman for wages?
No, because they were engaged in illegal.
Because robbing people on the highways is illegal, and as we've already established, prostitution is illegal.
What about her sending him that $500 a month from New York to Washington?
He was dumb.
I know that you want to ask me whether or not somehow or other...
She was supporting him at that stage.
She was providing money, believing in good faith, and incidentally, he at that point, acting in good faith, believing that they were building their spot in the West for their mutual enjoyment and future. And it was later that he changed his mind. You know, at the time that she sent the money, she believed. When he received the money, he believed that all of this was on the up and up in good faith. Later, you know, this woman had lived in New York 2 or 3 years after he had left. And you know what New York will do to anybody.
Can I ask a question going back to Israel? If in Israel, as there is in some other countries, and I think perhaps in some states in the United States, a couple gets a divorce and then continues to live together, the divorce is invalid. Is this divorce in Israel invalid?
No. Divorce, the divorce in Israel was a valid divorce, legally.
They had no written contract of any kind.
None.
Not a written word of any kind.
None.
Just one word and intent.
Mutual hopes and expectations, a sharing of their lifetime for a number of years, intimacy, the understanding between them, utter good faith and confidence in each other's goodwill and integrity.
But all that ended.
And all of that ended.
Isn't it true that when the good man decided to leave New York, and he also decided to leave his wife, and his intention all the time was establishing his own way on the West Coast?
Apparently not true.
No.
Apparently he really intended to go ahead and make the family, have the wife, make the homestead, have the family up. Up and up, good faith. Does that make a difference?
No.
Yes.
Yep.
But you people just can't make up your mind.
Which one was it decided they didn't want to continue the relationship? The wife or the man?
No, it was the man.
The man asked her to leave. Whether or not he did that because she was a witch, I don't know. I never met the Omers. Well, maybe we better explore this situation a little bit further.
Was she eligible for child support?
Yes.
In all probability, the answer to that is yes. Does that make a difference to you?
Well, I think she could get funds from him for that purpose.
Yes. She wants half of the property that's been accumulated. Does she get that?
Yes.
All right.
Morally. Legally, she can't.
Man and woman are married together. They obtain a divorce. Man is ordered to pay woman $500 a month alimony until such time as she dies or until she remarries. Okay? Woman meets Joe. Joe says, "Woman, marry me." And she says, "Sounds good to me. You got enough money to support us?" And he says, "No, but I've got 500, and with your 500, we'll get along fine." She says, "If I marry you, I won't have 500. He says, "Woman, don't marry me. Just come and live with me." She says, "Genius." So now they live together, sharing an intimate and a very good relationship for the first month. And then man hears about this, and instead of sending a check for 500, he sends a note which says, "Thank you for relieving me from any further obligation to pay you 500 a month." She says, "I am not married." He says, "You're just as good as married." She says, "I am not." He says, "She is." He says, "He's not." She sues him to collect back alimony. She says, "Alimony is to continue until I am dead, which I am not, or until I am remarried, which I am not." Does she get her alimony?
Yes.
No, he went to his kids.
Yes.
And.
Not in good faith.
She does get her alimony, how many? You understand, if you don't vote, you get shot. She does not get her alimony. Somebody around here is going to get shot. Let's try it once more. Those of you who believe that she is not remarried and therefore still gets her $500 alimony, put up your hand. Oh, that's different. Oh, some of you think that she is remarried but still gets her alimony?
No.
You asked if
she's not remarried.
And then we raised her.
All right, let's try it again. I want the vote of all of those of you who think that this woman, even though she isn't technically remarried, is at least in contract and in sharing love and affection and all of that kind of good stuff, functionally remarried, and therefore she does not get her alimony anymore.
But she's not legally remarried.
Okay, and those of you who believe that she should still get her alimony. Now we're still going to have to shoot both of them.
This money, she worked in the restaurant hard, and it was her money in the first place.
And she said to him, does that bear any...
Well, you're back in the over case, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't resolve the problem that way. We'll take another cut at it. A man and a woman have lived together. Incidentally, all of these are actual cases. I'm not bright enough to think these up. A man and a woman have lived together for a number of years, married, perfectly legitimate. He dies. She has an income from a government pension program. She has more income from a private insurance policy on his life, which was to pay her an annuity. Both the pension program and the insurance policy provide that her payments will continue for her life unless she remarries. In which case, of course, presumably she has support from somebody else and doesn't need that income anymore. She meets Joe. Joe says, marry me. She says, Joe, I love you dearly. I'd love to marry you. I'd like to, but we just can't get along with the money, without the money. And out comes the part, and incidentally, this happened. Honest, I'm not making this up. She went to her pastor and said, Pastor, what do we do? And the pastor said, if you marry each other, you will not have enough income to live. Therefore, do not marry. However, you are both advanced in age, and you need companionship, and it's good that you should have companionship, so why don't you just live together? And she said, because, Pastor, if you want me to be honest about it, I'd feel dirty about it. And he says, then I will bless your relationship.
Hello, Lutheran Pastor.
You might be surprised. And the pastor blessed, and they lived together, and both the pension people and the insurance people refused to make further payments. And she sued. How do you feel about that one?
She still wasn't entitled to it.
She ought to be hanged, huh?
No.
He ought to be hanged. Somebody ought to be hanged.
Policy and conditions of the government pension.
that they have their rights too.
Oh, it's a straight ripoff. Well, the insurance company would have charged a lot more on the premium, you know, if you take the risk for a lifetime despite remarriage, and a lot less premium if you take a lifetime annuity subject to termination upon marriage. That costs you different amount. She's just a plain thief.
Yeah.
Well,
no,
no. Excuse me, just a minute. Yeah.
Just a minute. In neither this case or one other one you cited, either of these parties agreed that they were going to be married to each other, that they formed a contract between themselves, whether this contract had a piece of paper with it or not. In both cases, in one case, it was a written contract that they were not going to be married to each other. And I don't know about this one you're just now talking about. In any case, neither one of these parties ever agreed to be known as married to each other.
No, just blessed.
And one step further. I can remember when I was younger, and there was no onus on this. Today, of course, we throw an onus on it immediately. But I knew of several businessmen and so on in the local city who were widowers and who had a lady living in the house as his housekeeper. Maybe she got pay, maybe she only got room and board. I don't know. But there was nobody held up their hands and said, oh my, they're living in sin and so on. Today, if you do that, oh my, my, they're living in sin.
Were they?
I don't know. Somebody made an issue of it.
I don't know this pastor to bless this couple, but I know that the Cedar Citizens organizations must bless them, because that's where this thing in the state of Washington I'm speaking about, where I'm acquainted, that is where this sort of a situation exists. 9 out of 10 older couple who were one or the other, widowed or whatever, have come to live together, and they live in bliss all the time. Somebody bless them somewhere.
Oh, I have a question. If the insurance, if this first man that she lived with made that insurance to her, why isn't that her money? Why would marriage or anything, why would that enter in?
There was a insurance company has control.
Do we happen to have an insurance person here who would like to respond to that? I will respond. When you buy insurance, you pay some money for protection against a certain risk. My house burns, my boat sinks, my spouse dies, whatever it may be. These people bought from the insurance company a promise that if the husband died before the wife did, that the insurance company would pay this many dollars a month until the woman died or until she remarried. That's all she bought. If she remarried, the insurance company has performed its promise. It's done everything that they... So she didn't marry. Or did she?
Well, that's the question. The insurance companies, the pension people would have to prove that a normal marriage relationship existed between these two people.
They lived together.
They couldn't inhabit the same house without it.
They cohabited. The facts are they had intercourse, if that's important to anybody. They shared their income, shared the house. Do I detect some sympathy for the woman?
Sharing the house doesn't necessarily.
Intercourse, if that's important to you. I don't know that it's important, but if it is, why, it was there.
Cohabitation seems to be that. Anyway, my opinion, and it always has been, because I've heard people say, well, older people can't live unless they cohabit, you know, and both of them, they don't want to give up their pension. Well, I say if the pastor blesses them, they should bless a couple of young people who've never been married that want to live together. I can't see the difference.
Well, maybe we ought to work on that. But first, let's take care of the couple that we've got. I want to know whether or not she gets to collect that pension and insurance, because they were not, you know, so old that they were no longer working. They were acquiring income. They were investing it in a house and purchase. And I want to know whether or not you're going to tell me they're not married, so that pretty soon the man in whose name the property was taken can boot her out the door and keep the house.
He can.
Well, if you mean that he weighs 180, she only weighs 110, no. And therefore he can. Or do you mean legally that if they're not married, she has? I want to know whether or not you people are going to divide marriage into pieces. You know,
no.
Married for this purpose, not married for this purpose. Married for this purpose, not purpose.
Yeah. We're back to Omar and Omar.
Back around the circle.
The law is law.
The law is law?
Right. If you're not legally married before the law and you go to court, the judge can't make ethical decisions. He has to follow the law.
I see that I'm making a dent in a way. I've now got her saying unless you are legally married.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to live together, I'm not
can you live together?
Kind of an onus
what?
On people's lives. But law is law.
Since they were already divorced, she had turned it over to him, in my opinion. And then she was just taking a risk that it would still be that.
She made a contract that they were going to be legally divorced to accomplish a particular purpose, which, whether it was right or wrong, they thought they had to accomplish. There are hundreds of cases in the United States in which men and women who are married to each other and who have discovered that if you're not married to each other, you don't have to pay as much income tax.
Yes, true.
Are obtaining a divorce in December, mm-hmm. filing their income taxes separate, single person, and getting married again in January. It only costs $5. The fact is, if you know the pastor well, you can get it for nothing. Marriage license is cheap. Will those people not have to pay the same income tax as my wife and I, who have just never really gotten around into that pattern yet? We've missed the chance for 33 years now to save income tax payments. Are those people, during the time between early December and early January, are they single or are they married?
They're married.
You people just don't know your own mind.
They are legally divorced.
They are legally divorced.
They are committing fraud.
They're committing fraud.
I'm kind of interested
in this notion. He says they are committing fraud.
Well, they are.
What's that got to do with it?
A lot.
It has a lot to do with all of your contracts when. Contract is made with deceit.
Fraudulent intention?
That's right.
Then we're going to order a bull pen.
Right.
Whether they're young people or old.
Doesn't matter.
If they are trying to evade the laws of society by not going through a marriage ceremony in the way that you're supposed to, then they are committing fraud. And we're not, well, if we're not going to hang them, at least we're not going to help them.
Well, the IRS is looking into it now, and the investigators.
The IRS has made up its mind.
That's
as far as the IRS is concerned, you're still married all the time. That's big news. No, who's surprised? Yes, sir.
You know, it seems to me that we don't know anything about law, and so we can't really, that gal can't defend that person, nor... Can you establish a defense attorney or whatever?
It's kind of pretty good.
And I think we're probably more acquainted with the moral law, would be judging by what we know about the moral law, which is, I think, pretty plain in the book.
Good. What is it?
Read the fine print.
No, it's Old Testament.
But neither one of these people were married to anybody else, so it's not adultery.
That's true.
You know, adultery is where a married person has intercourse with someone who is not his or her wife.
But in God's sight, they've committed a sin or...
Oh, what is it?
I don't know the name of it, but it says...
Fornication.
Cleave to one, the woman should cleave to the
He's
man.
Cleaving. They're both cleaving. No, they did not separate physically during the month of December. They were cleaving all the time. Does that make a difference to you?
Miss Whitford.
you who are pastors, I don't know what the present marriage license says in the state of Washington, if you happen to be pastors here, because I've been kicking up such a fuss about this, they may possibly have changed it. But it used to say that you are authorized, I'm talking about a marriage ceremony, that you are authorized by the state of Washington, by the authority vested in me by the state of Washington, I now pronounce you man and wife.
Same way in Ohio.
Same way in
you people who are pastors, do you think that you are performing a ceremony by authority of the civil state, the civil law? Think about that just a moment, and I'll tell you why I want to know. Yesterday we talked a little bit about equal protection before the laws. 14th Amendment, Federal Constitution, applicable to all states. I have a good friend who used to be a clergyman on the campus of the University of Washington, Father Toomey, a Roman Catholic man, and a fine man, a fine clergyman, highly respected. I cherish him as being one of my good friends. I called him one day and I said to him, Father, I'm sending over two people to you and they would like to be married. And he said, fine. And I said, before they arrive, I think you ought to know that both of them have been married before and both divorced. He said, get lost. I said, Father, as an agent of the state of Washington, acting under the law of the state of Washington, you may not discriminate and deny equal protection of the laws of this state on the basis of religious preference. He said, you may not think I can. I said, if you refuse to perform, and this time he knew I was joking, if you refuse to perform this ceremony, I will go to the court and obtain a mandate from the court ordering you to do your duty as a servant of the state of Washington under its laws, by authority of which you perform marriages. If you were the court and I came and asked for such a mandate ordering that man to perform the ceremony, would you order him to perform the ceremony? You mean you would deliberately violate the constitutional requirements of the United States and be a judge?
If you went to judge for that order, he can perform the ceremony himself, so why can't he do it?
These people didn't want to be married by a judge. They wanted to be married by a Roman Catholic clergyman. In the state of Washington? I know that some people feel that they owe their primary allegiance to God.
How about freedom of religion?
Freedom of religion. Why doesn't the clergyman then perform blessing ceremonies by authority of God, not by the authority of the state of Washington? Or if you don't want to issue such an order as a judge, pick up your cloak and get off.
Yeah.
Don't you sit on that bench and refuse to enforce the law of this state. Oh, you're hedging. You're trying to duck. You're a judge and I want a mandate that says that this clergyman's got to perform that ceremony whether his religion happens to say that it's good or bad. He's an agent of the state of Washington. Do you or don't you, Your Honor?
Get the mandate.
I get the mandate.
I give you the mandate.
You get the mandate.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to go against his conscience, does he?
The judge?
The
minister says that it's wrong for people to marry under those circumstances.
Is marriage a civil or a religious act?
I'm glad I asked you first. We have 5 minutes left, and we're down now to where we only have about 25 or 30 hours of discussion left. You will, of course, have recognized in all of this Marvin against Marvin, which is certainly not new law in the state of Washington. In the United States. Most states have had cases like Marvin for many years. It's just that we've never before had anybody who was quite as well known as Lee Marvin and Michelle.
Well, according to the law,
marriage is a civil ceremony, and if he is a civil servant, he has to perform his duty.
Yes. Well, you're talking about the priest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's true. Well, let me try to put a couple of loose ends together.
Let me ask you a question, though.
Yes, ma'am.
Does a priest come under the civil law of the state of Washington?
He's a citizen of the state.
He's a citizen of the state, but does he have to perform a ceremony?
No, he doesn't have to perform a ceremony.
This is not his duty.
No, it's not. He doesn't have to marry anybody. But if he marries anybody, he's got to marry anybody else.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
I have for a long time, both here and in my classroom and in the legislature of the state of Washington, said that I think it would be great if in my religion I saw my children baptized and saw the state issue a birth certificate, and I saw my loved ones buried and saw the state issue a death certificate, and saw my relationship with my spouse blessed, and saw the state issue documents that say that I can inherit and get a divorce and own property. And but it happens that in the middle we've decided that clergymen are going to marry people by authority of the state of Ohio or Illinois or New York or Washington. And if you're going to get in the kitchen, you better like the heat. But you are disturbing me from tying up these ends. Omer against Omer. The woman gets the property, or a share of it.
I think.
Congratulations, Counselor. She gets the property because you can trace it, and the court says that in fairness and equity, in fairness and equity, this law-violating, perjuring, lying, deceitful woman, you know, she's done all of those things, is entitled to trace the property, and just out of a sense of decency and fairness, she gets it back. Yeah. So here comes Michelle Marvin, Lee Marvin's consort, who says out of decency and good order and fairness, think what I've done for this man, Lee Marvin. I've provided him all of these services, some of them sexual and some of them not. I've cooked for him. I've kept house for him. I've met his guests at the door. We have had mutual effort, and he's made $3 million during that time, and I want half of it. Does she get it?
Not all of it.
No.
Not all of it.
Does she get? You mean she just?
They didn't divide it. They gave her what?
They didn't divide it. No. That's very important in the Marvin case. The California Supreme Court said that the community property law does not apply because that applies only to married people. So zip, no community property. She had a contract with him, and that contract said that in the event that they separated, he would support her for, hold on to your hats, for life.
Yeah.
Boy, what a deal. You don't get that in marriage, believe me. If you dissolve your marriage, you're lucky to get 6 months. She's going to have be supported for life under the contract. Does she get that?
No, she didn't.
Enough for
rehabilitation. Enough for rehabilitation. All right, she did get $100,000 chicken feed, you know, when you're in the $3 million category. She spent a lot more than that getting that $100,000. So she isn't going home rich. And as far as Lee Marvin is concerned, this is the best $100,000 he ever spent in his life. Now, this guy was almost forgotten by us, and now I suppose that any movie or TV show is going to be a gold mine for him.
She asked for the state to pay for that, did they?
No, did not.
No.
Good try, didn't make it. What I want to know is, what was the relationship between Marvin and Marvin?
They had a contract.
They had a contract.
Yeah, but the contract wasn't legal.
The contract was not legal?
Was the contract legal?
Are you asking me or telling me? The man and the woman decide to go into the business of raising cattle. This is a case we have in Washington. It's the case on which the Marvin decision was turned. It was the authority upon which the California case relied. Not far from here, up the Mentow Valley. The man was raising, had a farm in which he had fine black Angus cattle. This woman, who was a Canadian, Indian woman, some European, some Indian blood, Canadian citizenship, came down and she had helped him raise cattle. She could ride a horse and punch cattle and do all the rest of those things like the best of them. And she worked hard. And they prospered. And he had emphysema. And he laid in bed and signed checks, and she took care of the cattle, and she helped that venture prosper. Is she entitled to any money? Oh, I forgot to tell you, they also had four children. Oh, I forgot, almost forgot that. They also had four children. Is she entitled to any money? Oh, I forgot to tell you. He was married. And his wife was living in Wenatchee. So I forgot some important things. She worked terribly hard and terribly successfully. They did have children. He was married. He died.
Did he get hung?
His wife came upstream. Said, now I will take the cattle and the farm and the money. And she said, oh, no, you won't. I am going to get it under contract.
Well, didn't they have a contract?
And she, the wife, said, yes, they had a contract.
They had a written contract.
Didn't have a written contract.
Oh,
it makes a difference whether it's, if you want to be dishonest and illegal, do it in writing. Is that what you're telling me?
No.
Oh, it can make a big difference sometimes. There are such things as the statute of frauds, which says certain contracts have to be in writing or they're not enforceable. It covers a little teeny number of contracts. All the rest of them are valid if they are simply agreements between persons which can be proven by some other evidence. And this woman had plenty of evidence.
They went into business together, didn't they?
They went into business together.
All right. So
and more.
As far as the material property was concerned, I'm not talking about the children. But as far as the material property was concerned, the fact that they were in went into business together seems to me is to be the same as any other two partners going into
the fact that you've got business and monkey business at the same time will not invalidate them.
I don't think so. A businessman out here can be in have his secretary in here as a partner in his business, and he might be taking her back room, and I think she can still be in business with him.
Just because he is a violator of law doesn't mean that the contract is invalidated.
That's correct.
Would it make any difference whether you happen to say it the other way? Let's hold ourselves out as if we were living together under an agreement and also raise black Angus cattle. Then you can't recover. You people at least know the meaning of the word legalistic, don't you?
Well,
you can split corners even finer than I can. Nice distinction.
Well, if you first went into business together.
Okay, first we are raising black Angus cattle, and one day I say to her, you know, you're really not bad. Nothing to do with the business. Does she recover as a joint owner of community property?
Not community property.
Not marriage property.
Business
part. Frank, what about the children?
That's an interesting question. That was yesterday morning.
They are part of the issue because neither
I should not give you a flip answer. In the state of Washington, as in some other states, we have a statute known as the Uniform Paternity Act. And under that act, there are, I'm happy to say this, no longer in the state of Washington any such things as illegitimate children. Every child is a legitimate child of a man and a woman, even though they happen to be married to other persons altogether.
That's the way it should be.
You have legal parents, the child is legitimate even though the husband and the wife are not married to each other. That's our law, so I can answer that one easily in the state of Washington, as far as the children. Well, this case in Washington was the case that was relied upon by the California court in Marvin against Marvin. And they said just what you've been saying. Marvin and Marvin were in business. Mm-hmm. What their business was entertaining movie producers and so forth and getting parts for Marvin and making money. And they were going to share the property that was earned by Marvin, all $3 million of it, during the time that the relationship? Marriage?
No.
No, not marriage. Relationship?
Yes.
A partnership?
Contract.
Business relationship? And the Marvin case says quite clearly in the Supreme Court decision, it all depends whether or not he was going to pay her for sex or whether he was going to pay her for entertaining. And which one more? Because we will not compel a man to pay for prostitution. Even though he's received the services, it's the highwayman's case all over again. But the fact that there was both business and monkey business doesn't disqualify an action based upon the business. Now, I've overused my time and overused your patience, and I have not yet told you whether or not a marriage must be legal, because I don't know. It all depends what question you're asking. If you mean that those people who committing themselves to each other, perhaps the Lakes, the Pecks, in good conscience and good faith, those Russian-German folks, if you're asking the question whether or not they were living in sin, and I mean that technically, theologically, I guess I'd say no.
I agree with you.
If you mean whether or not one of those good Russian, German-Russian folks could years later have sued the other one and obtained a divorce, and alimony, I'd get awfully nervous. But I guess I'd say no, because that's a legal relationship of marriage. And where I come down with that is another illustration of the complexity of trying to mix my convictions as a Christian person and my duty as a lawyer to respect and practice the laws of the state in which I am authorized to practice. You may be able to make that dichotomy cleanly and say, that's easy, you know. One's business and one's monkey business. One's gospel and one's law. I have a lot more trouble with that. Because I would like to think that I am one person living in one society relating to one other group of people, and that I'm not a Christian on Sunday morning and a lawyer on the other 6 days. I would like to think that there is a flow that goes through here, and so the problem for me is not quite that simple. I have to decide whether or not my Christian conviction enables me to make judgments like, am I free to do what I think is in the best interest of these people and in the best interest of society, and where those two things clash with each other so that one necessarily is inconsistent with the other, as is so often the case, that then I must make a judgment as to which is the lesser evil and the greater good.
If you
become. Or do I have to wait until the legislature changes the words in the book someplace? You people are terribly patient.
How did the Canadian turn out?
The outcome.
Canadian woman.
Canadian case, the Supreme Court said, why, of course, if she has a contract, she's entitled to be paid. Then they went back to the trial court to let her approve the contract, and the trial judge said, no contract. And she got nothing. Oh, is that surprising to you? Marvin against Marvin, the first run around. The trial court said, why, of course you have no cause of action, you're not married. The Supreme Court, and dismissed right there. Don't even bother me with the evidence. You can't possibly recover, you're not married. It's unlawful, you're the highwayman's case. Good thing you weren't in England a century ago, we would have hanged you. She appealed to the California Supreme Court. California Supreme Court said that is not a basis for dismissal. She can recover on the contract. Now go on down and see what the terms of the contract were. And you know the answer to that one just as of a month ago. The trial court on remand of the case said you don't even have a contract. I'll give you $100,000 just for sort of rehabilitation, the term. In lawyers' terms now called palimony. She recovered nothing contractually, nothing in terms of property. It's just a judge who out of the clear blue sky gave her something that could have been overturned on appeal. But why in the world would Marvin want to appeal that decision? It's lovely. He's more than gotten his money's worth.
Well, what it boils down to practically, in practical sense, is ladies, don't go live with this guy. You know, marry him. Then you've got a contract that will hold up in the courts, that will take care of you.
I'm keeping you over time, and I'll do this just as quickly as I can. There is no question, but what if some lady wants to live with some man without getting technically married, that any good lawyer, any able lawyer, I guess I shouldn't say good, any able lawyer can write enough documents to protect your economic interests almost all the way that you want them protected. Now that means that you're going to have deeds and trusts and contracts and wills and lots of things, and it's going to cost you quite a bit to get all of those legal services. For $7.50, you can get a package deal, which not only takes care of all of that, but provides you with centuries of established jurisprudence to provide you at the point of dissolution of the marriage, if it comes to that, with much better remedies than you're ever going to get on these ones that I can draw. No, $7.50 is just the better deal.
Give us the case outcomes.
I'm sorry?
Give us the case outcomes.
Which one?
All of them.
Over and over, the woman did get the property. She had what the law calls a constructive trust. She was able to follow it. Quite a few state legislatures have now said that a woman who is entitled to alimony and cohabits loses her alimony. Notwithstanding those statutes, courts are holding, they're finding a way of getting around it and saying that it doesn't terminate because she needs it. In the cattle raising case, she was entitled to recover on the contract if she could prove it, but she couldn't prove it. In the Marvin case, she was entitled to recover on the agreement if she could prove it. She couldn't prove it. She got $100,000 just for life.
What about the two in between?
In other words, what you're saying is the contract is not a contract unless you've got a piece of paper to prove it.
You've got to have proof of some sort. You can write it, or else you can have the bishop in and let him hear you say it. If he's a credible witness, that'll do. Tape recorder, would you like?